Chapter 52. A Fresh Start. Peter Bluey and I had been an item for over a year. Our attempt to move to the New England tableland, in northern New South Wales, had failed for various reasons, but we remained determined to leave Sydney, with the intention of creating a quieter, more meaningful life, somewhere within striking distance of the Big Smoke. I'd recently applied for the position of hand weaver in residence with the Goulburn College of Advanced Education, a teacher training facility, with a textile department, in need of an injection of contemporary ideas and new fibre skills. On the off chance of getting the job, Peter suggested we take a leisurely drive down to Goulburn one Saturday morning, where we inadvertently stumbled upon a gracious 10-room solid brick Federation house, with a separate garage, 9 meters square, that would be an ideal studio. They say good things happen in threes, and this was my experience when relocating to Goulburn. Firstly, the interview for the college job was successful, the result, a well-paid 11-month residency, with the promise of a separate studio space, where I could be easily accessed by students, staff, and the wider community. The studio space would be large enough to house my gear, and cater for both one-on-one consultations, as well as larger workshop gatherings. I was chomping at the bit, eager to see where a project of this kind could go, without the constraints of a teaching load. Secondly, the bank manager agreed to lend me the money to buy the house of my dreams. And thirdly, the vendors accepted my offer of $24,000. Roll of drums. The die was cast. The house was ours, and off to Goulburn we would go. We were now a trio, made up of Peter, myself, and the latest addition to our family, a puppy named Sass. I was totally unprepared for parenthood, so how did this happen? Here beginneth the tale. Backtracking to late 1978, the Hooper's dog, Cumla, a likable black, droopy-eared pet shop acquisition, came with us to Horse Creek over Christmas. Cumla had joined the crew, pushing to finish making bricks, and laying them before the winter rain. In the flurry to depart Sydney, Cumla's contraceptive pill was left behind, and as a consequence, she came on heat over the holidays. Coco, a border collie Kelpie cross-working dog from the adjoining property, came to visit, and the outcome was inevitable. Returning to Sydney, Cumla's pregnancy progressed, and we speculated on the gender of the expected puppies. The youngest Hooper daughter announced that her family would take a girl puppy, and insisted I take a boy. This was an unexpected development, but it seemed I had no choice in the matter. For the first time I would have the responsibility of owning a dog, so I began thinking of a suitable name. I was fond of the Scandinavian girl's name, Saskia, but I was conflicted. Could you give a boy dog a girl's name? I decided the problem could be solved by abbreviating the name Saskia to Sass. I was present at the birth. Two of the puppies were still born, but there was a boy and a girl, living. To my surprise, I immediately bonded with the small black ball of fluff. 6 weeks later, I was packed up and on the road to Goulburn, with Sass sitting on the passenger seat of my beat-up VW Beetle, wearing a red leather puppy collar and matching red lead. He looked so cute. To begin with, the living conditions at the house were somewhat basic, though we did have electricity, hot water, and two loos. Peter focused on moving his accountancy practice into one of the many bedrooms, and I concentrated on preparing for the college residency. Being a blow-in, I needed to make myself known to the local craft power brokers as quickly as possible. After which, I could then assess how to best reach out to them, once I was installed as the college's hand weaver in residence. I began work in early June, 1979. As part of the residency package, a top-of-the-range Leclerc 60-inch weaving loom, with all the bells and whistles, plus associated equipment, was immediately ordered from Canada, for my use. In the interim, I had access to the textile department's 45-inch floor loom. Initially, I was squeezed into a corner of the textile classroom, until, at my insistence, a more suitable, quieter space was found. Until the loom arrived from Canada, I used the new space to engage the broader community by conducting 10-week courses, one night a week, in off-loom weaving and soft leather garment construction. In this way, the skills I'd acquired in Mexico were put to good use. As the college was a teacher training facility, part of my contractual agreement was to provide in-service training for teachers working across the region, and I clearly remember one two-day off-loom workshop, south of Goulburn. We were at a well-appointed facility in bushland, near Maruya. Part of the workshop experience included a wander in the surrounding bushland, searching for interesting bits of nature, suitable for inclusion in a non-functional textile art piece. I joined the participants for the ramble, and to my surprise, stumbled upon a full set of male lyrebird tail feathers. I couldn't believe my eyes, as each feather was so beautiful up close. Concerned, I had a good look around for a bird body, but found nothing. I later learned male lyrebirds molt annually. The feathers held pride of place in my workspace, because they were a constant reminder of this country's uniqueness, as I continued to ease myself back into Australian life, when in truth, I'd left my heart in Latin America. 5 months into my 11-month residency, the long-awaited loom arrived from Canada, and putting it together was a breeze. I was dead keen to get going, as the planned Morley-made exhibition, the grand finale of my residency, was only 6 months away. The college employed a graphic designer, who'd done her training at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. She was amazingly talented and underutilized. I recognized her talent and used her skills for the duration of my contract. For my exhibition, she pulled out all stops. She photographed me weaving, her images used for three large wall panels. She also designed and screen-printed exhibition invitations and posters, and lastly, dreamed up the quirky Morley-made logo that was a series of connected M's in a row. The logo was used for woven labels, and later, letterheads and business cards. The labels are still in use today, some 40 years on, and a lasting testimony to good design. By midsummer, my on-campus studio space, a demountable with little insulation, was like an oven. It was impossible for me to work there from midday onwards. With the exhibition deadline approaching, the loom was moved to my house, where I'd be able to weave at all hours of the day and night. The exhibition opened at the College Gallery on Friday, the 30th of May, 1980. Ron Brewer, the then federal member for Eden Monero, officiated, surrounded by raw fleece floor rugs, floor cushions, and a variety of garments, including hooded ponchos. Sales exceeded expectations. The exhibition was then to tour to Canberra, Cooma, Young and Eden. Thankfully, I'd produced additional stock for the tour. When it came time to write a final report for both the college and the Crafts Board, Peter offered to help, as he was accustomed to financial report writing. In the final wash-up, all the stakeholders declared the 11-month residency a huge success. Afterwards, more workshops, another residency, and a university lectureship followed, then time overseas, before coming to rest in Toowoomba, where, in 1988, I set up the Morley Granger Studio. But, I'm getting ahead of myself. On reflection. Moving to Goulburn. To be completely honest, I was relieved when Peter changed his mind about moving to Bow Creek, situated in the back blocks of northern New South Wales. I was relieved, because I knew I had a better chance of finding well-paid work closer to Sydney, even though I had the money from the sale of my terrace house as a financial buffer. I'd entrusted the proceeds of the sale to Peter, a chartered accountant and professional money manager. I believed that he'd invest the money wisely, and that the interest would be useful if things got tough. Sometime later, I discovered that he was an undischarged bankrupt, and, unbeknownst to me, had already spent my money. I realized I'd made an expensive mistake, but I was in too deep. Instead of bailing out, I hung in, hoping to make the best of the situation, at the same time wondering for how long I could sustain a relationship with a man I didn't trust. I'm pleased to report, dear listener, that I've not made the same mistake again. Reflecting, I wonder how many other women have found themselves in a relationship with a person whose integrity they question. I cannot be the only one. The college residency. The feedback I received from my time at the college was extremely positive, and I was proud to have my effectiveness acknowledged. I was also grateful for the firm friendships I'd forged during my first year in Goulburn. The success of my stint at the college provided me with an entree into the New South Wales contemporary textile scene. The scene comprised an elite coterie of multi-talented people. I felt I'd found a circle of like-minded artists, and took comfort from this, as I moved on to my next challenge. To establish a studio in the shed beside my house. The Morley Made Exhibition. A number of the exhibition pieces comprised simple T-shaped garments, woven with hand-spun wool, silk, and mohair. I was able to double my spun thread output with a homemade electric spinning wheel, made with a jumbo spindle, powered by a sewing machine motor. Facts. The Nihilus Loom is an 8-shaft, 60-inch flying shuttlejack loom. It was, and still is, the Rolls-Royce of production looms. On it, I was able to weave a meter of fabric, per hour, up to 60 inches wide. It was just the ticket for the mass production of saleable items needed for the touring exhibition, planned at the end of the residency.